Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have a big party cast crew hanging out right now. Tim's here, Purnell's here, Chris is here, Brooks here, Aki's here. How's everyone doing?
Pretty good.
Silent.
It's silent. I'm almost not sick, so pretty good.
That's a good sign. Yeah.
I have internet, so that's good.
Yay.
That's fantastic. I'd rather be deathly ill than not have internet.
Well, you would have rather have been deathly ill last Thursday in my house.
Yeah,
Thursday you didn't have internet?
I hate when I lose electricity even like 2 hours. So.
Well, we had electricity. Electricity was fine, but yeah, there was an ice storm Wednesday night. I didn't have internet the entire day Thursday. It was back Friday morning.
You would have had to be me last week then. Shoot.
I was fine. I was totally fine with it. It was the rest of the people in my house that were like having trouble. Yeah, I was like, well, I guess I just, you know,
do you not have phones?
Yeah, no, I have a phone, but it's just, you know.
Oh, yeah, I keep forgetting I have free unlimited data.
Yeah, no,
I don't use my phone for anything.
Yeah, you can't stream stuff on the TV. I'm not tethering, you know, my TV to my phone. That's not going to work. And, you know, my kid couldn't do certain things on the internet, the signal
quality on that.
Yeah, it'd be bad. But I was just like, yeah, whatever. You know, I got plenty of games downloaded locally. This is not a problem for me.
See, if I lost the internet, I would just have to use phone data, and I'd just stream myself on Twitch building a Gunpla. That's what I did last time that happened.
Yeah.
God, my phone was so hot at the end of it, because it was like
a couple hours, and my phone was roasting.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was like at least like an inch of ice on like everything. Some like a giant, like huge branch came off the old tree in my neighbor's yard and almost destroyed my fence, but it didn't.
That's a relief.
Yes, it is a relief. Like if the fence went where I originally intended for it to be, it would have destroyed my fence. But fortunately, it needed to be a little closer because of just property boundaries and code and shit. So,
is their tree dead or?
No, it's alive. It's like an older tree, and you know, when ice accrues, it can expose weaknesses. I mean, there's tons of branches down all around my neighborhood, or there was. So.
Speaking of accruing, we are accruing an audience. As Dopey has just rated us with 28 viewers. We can't wait to lose all of you in the next minute and a half.
But thank you for showing up.
Yeah, good night, everybody. Thanks for staying for the raid and getting those channel points. Get those games.
I don't know. I have a feeling that we might keep some of them. Jacob's not here.
But you are.
Oh,
but people love me. Yeah. I don't know fucking why, but
I'm here too.
Yeah, wish tonight was the night.
You're
fine-ish. Reviewing Metroid Prime Remastered, but
yeah,
some fine indie games coming up.
Yeah, we got a good lineup tonight. There's some good games to talk. Did you want to dive into these now, or did you want to chat more first?
Well, that's up to you, man.
Nah, I'm good with whatever.
Figure it out quick. There's 30 people here.
I'm just trying to. I don't care because I'm building a gun.
Whatever.
I'm trying to.
Do it alive.
Without breaking into my storage bins, I'm like trying to remember if I own Defenders of Dinatron City or not.
Oh, man.
Just bust into them and check.
I'm pretty sure.
Be like me. Do something else while this is going.
I'm pretty sure.
Thanks, Aki.
You're welcome.
It's how I focus,
okay? Fuck off.
I think I do own Greg Norman's Golf Power, which is a great, great title for a game.
See, at some point, I decided I did not need. I did not need to own 300 NES carts anymore.
Fall and into I the abyss.
Sold off
of my gaping butthole. All of
them.
Well, I only own five. I just can't remember which ones they are.
That would be really funny. They're just all scattered around.
I'm just like
the freaking Dragon Balls in your house. Right. When you find them all, you get to wish for another cartridge, and then in bed they scatter about again.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, now I have merely 44.
Now that I found Greg Norman's golf power, I can wish for Hudson Hawk.
Like every child did for Christmas in 1991.
Yes. That game was great. Oh, no. Do I own James Bond Jr.? I don't know. Great soundtrack, though.
Wow. Hudson Hawk actually came out in 1991. I can't believe I nailed that.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Good job on that. You were so confident, I didn't even question it. I was like, yeah, that sounds about right. And I'm not going to argue that.
Oh, man.
And the NES was still releasing stuff in the 90s.
They technically stopped handing out the seals of quality in 1994.
Yeah, I mean, I think games were coming out until 95, 96. What was Wario's Woods was the last one, correct?
Yeah, that was 1994.
That was 94. Okay.
That was the last, officially release. I mean, I'm reviewing one that came out this year, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, little, I don't know how many people, are aware, but, like, a lot of, you know, plug-and-play TV games are NES games. Like, they are just, they're NES, little NES games in there, so.
Yeah, exactly. There's somebody I follow on Twitter that talks about them a lot.
Yeah, is it Frank Cifaldi?
It is, I actually.
Because that's why I know about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's like a friend of some of my friends, and, like, we've hung out a few times. But, I mean, yeah, it's just a fascination for that guy's life, for sure.
Yeah, well, that is, for those that don't know, Frank Cifaldi is the Video Game History Foundation. Had a good panel at MAGFest this year. I was able to stop and catch some of it. Well, one of his panels I was able to catch, which was fun. Just some cool stuff.
He's real fun to talk to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't actually gotten to have a conversation. I sent him a bunch of my old video game magazines, because they do that. Oh, nice. That like retro video game subscription thing to raise money for the foundation. So like, if you subscribe to that, you might get some of my old EGMs or Game Pros.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
I try not to accumulate too many of those.
I did. And then I decumulated them at the Video Game History Foundation.
Yes.
I kept the Nintendo Powers though.
Yeah. One should always keep the Nintendo Powers.
I kept a few, you know, a few like random EGMs just trying to, for nostalgia's sake, you know, but
yeah,
I think I still have a handful of old game magazines that I kept just for like, well, there was something in here about this game that I really liked and I wanted to hold on to that. It's like there was a one page article about Chrono Trigger that I really liked or something stupid.
Yeah. I need to isolate the two issues of Nintendo Power that I am in, because there was one where they published one of my letters in the mid 90s, and then they did an article about River City Rumble at some point, you know, after that came out.
Oh, wow.
So, Tim, how did it feel to be in Nintendo Power?
Oh, it's really cool. I mean, especially, you know, it was cool when they published my letter, which, by the way, it was, they were like, I don't know, just taking the prompt was just like reader suggestions for games. And I was like, they should make a fighting game with Final Fantasy characters. And then they did eventually, like 10 years later.
Huzzah.
Yeah.
Here, guys. God bless
the ring. But when River City Rumble was in there, that actually felt like special, because like I had earned it more. It wasn't like just kind of like a random kid writing a letter. It's like, no, I did some work that was noteworthy enough to cover in a small blurb in Nintendo Power. It was not huge, but it was in there, and they had the cover art of Dave and Darren on there. So I was like, hey, that's pretty cool. I don't remember what issue it is. I need to figure it out. It's
that's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Where's my total?
Oh, there he is.
I made it to the bottom of the list, but I don't know what my total is. I'll find out.
Of just NES games, or do you have
others? Just NES games? Yeah.
At the moment,
yeah. Well, let's see.
48,700.
I don't know how to tally it up on my
Well, if all we're doing is listening to Chris do math, then we should probably move forward.
Yeah, we should probably do reviews. First game to talk about tonight is Eldorand, developed by Mantra and Synergia Games.
Not Elden Ring, Eldorand.
Yes, big difference. And I'm surprised you didn't bring up Elden Ring having DLC this week.
Oh, yeah, they did announce that, but there's, I don't know, it's exciting. It's, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's happening. I can't think about it yet. I can't get excited about it yet.
Brooke, do you have any thoughts on Elden Ring getting an expansion?
Can she?
I do not. No thoughts at this time.
It's our people are already speculating that it's about Mikkola.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Honestly, I heard about it this morning and I was at work, and now we're like in my post right after work. And
I mean, there's so, one
team. I haven't really checked it out.
Yeah, there's like a teaser shot, and people are just kind of like, wow, is that Mikkola, you know, the one who Millennia is the blade of,
cool.
You know, and is a character who is not prominent in the game itself. And, you know, we'll see. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it.
You know that somebody like 2 hours ago already uploaded a YouTube video. It's like 10 things you didn't know about the teaser image for Elden Ring's new DLC.
Oh, wow, dude, that's so true.
Yeah, it is extremely true. But yeah, it's called Shadow of the Earth.
Easter eggs you can spot in the image.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I'm certainly getting it.
Yeah, same. I'm going to get it. And when I know I'm going to get something, I tend to go in like just eyes closed, be like, all right, throw it at me. Let's see what happens. Yeah. So I'm pretty pumped. I'm pumped to have this context, though, because we didn't seem like. I feel like I played the fuck out of that game, and I know I missed a lot of stuff, but like I feel like we just didn't do a lot with that guy. So interested to see more there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Eldorand.
So yeah, Eldorand. Should I keep that rant in the review? No. Eldorand, yes. Developed by Mantra and Synergia Games, published by Graffiti Games, released February 16th on Steam for $19.99. Only the strong will conquer this gruesome action platformer with RPG elements, dismember demonic creatures and terrifying bosses by wielding brutal weapons in intense skill-based combat. Slay or be slain as you collect glory and treasure in this nightmarish 2D world.
You can collect some gore too, sure, why not?
How many guts did you collect, Tim? Tell us about
your there are some rampage. Gruesome death animations, so like that's fair. Eldorand, not
Elden Ring.
And it's not, you know, when you sent me like the trailer for this game and I looked at it, I'm like, oh, that sure looks like a game I'd play. I was just like, yep.
Yeah,
assumed by it having Elder in the title, it was, you know, trying to dog whistle Souls enthusiasts and seeing the dark fantasy aesthetic. But it turns out it is not a Souls-like at all. It is a dark fantasy Metroidvania. You do not leave your shit where you are when you die. You just die and go back to your last save. It's kind of jarring.
Also jarring is when we get a sub. So, Javors, thank you so much for the sub. Fifth month, always good seeing you here.
Yeah.
Is that first?
So, segue? Yeah. The game has save points. And when you die, you, like, lose your progress, which... sucks sometimes when you've leveled up like multiple times while running around in an area and then suddenly you have to get those levels back again. You don't have to return to a bonfire, which actually the save points are bonfires, so there is a little bit of that spice in there. But no, it's like you gain a level, you can just spend the point out there in the field, you know, you gain a level and you get all your health and magic back, and it's like, okay, cool, nice, very good. Not a Souls like But yeah, it is a Metroidvania game. You have a, you know, somewhat non-linear world with different zones in it, with different aesthetics. You get some exploration abilities that are pretty much par for course. You know, you got a dash. You can dash in the air. You can double jump. I think there's a hookshot thing. More on that in a bit. But yeah, that's what you use, that you get those things and suddenly it's like, okay, now I can get to that platform I saw earlier. I can dash over those spikes that would kill me and get access a new area. There's one that just lets you open these doors, these ominous doors that have been scattered around, stuff like that. It does, I will say, the way the game conveys its story and lore is Souls-esque. One could say, and just it's like leaving notes around, though I guess they're a bit more detailed and less cryptic So maybe it's just like on, you know, any random video game that gives you notes at this point in life. But it just felt that way because it's all like dark and moody and so what I feel does set this game apart is not the experience system, which is pretty straightforward. You gain experiences, you kill things, you get a stat point, which you can dump into health, like strength, magic, or your skill, which correlates to, well, your health, your ability to use melee weapons, your ability to use magic staves, or your ability to use like thrown weapons or bows or knives or pop crits or whatever that skill at the end there. But so the way you outfit your character, there's melee weapons, which let you use a shield. There are like dual dagger sets, which let you, you know, just like rack up crits. There are bows with different types of arrows. There are magical staffs that you can use to cast magic spells. I mean, it's the magic is just like a straightforward like fireball energy blast thing straight in front of you. Like that is magic. And that consumes magic from the magic meter. But there is also sub-weapons. There is a, you know, there's daggers, which throw out, like, the daggers. And you also, they act like the sub-weapons in Castlevania, and you also activate them as you would the sub-weapons in Castlevania by just hitting up an attack. But yeah, there's a knife that shoots out forward very fast. There is an axe that whirls up in an arc in the air to enemies above you. There's a bomb that hits the ground and then makes a burny pile like the holy water. Those are the three. But they, you know, they get their stats, they derive their stats from either, you know, power, magic, or skill, too. And the cool thing is that you can set, like, two different, loadouts at a time. So it actually encourages, the design of the game encourages you to have different things on hand at any given time. So I played primarily using magic. I enjoy just blasting things with magic. But sometimes I need to block. So my second set was using a, you know, big sword or a big club with a shield. Now, I wasn't the best, you know, I didn't have the best melee swings. But, you know, in a pinch, when I'm out of magic, I could bash some things over the head. And I certainly would need that shield to block certain attacks. Though also by not powering up, like, my power, I couldn't block that many. Which also encourages you to kind of spread your points around instead of being like a one-trick pony. And I guess, you know, it sounds like a simple thing, but it just like it really works and like feels good to kind of tweak and mess around and be like, well, I want this sub-weapon over here. You know, maybe you want to... I was curious about exploring just going more skill-based with using the dual knives with like a bow for my ranged weapon. It's cool, and you do eventually get a respec ability where you can just like reset your points at no cost, just like whenever you want, if you want to try something different. And you're not like upgrading those weapons that you find, so it's not like you're wasting materials or whatever upgrading something. It's like, no, you just switch your points around and you can try a different style. The actual gameplay of it, like traversing around and fighting monsters, feels good. It's just like really solid stuff. The attacks aren't like slow and like super deliberate. Like it's just like, nope, you push the button and then you swing the sword. So it feels more akin to like a Castlevania than maybe some of the more modern games that do take after Souls, where they're giving you more deliberate, slower swings with weapons that you actually have to time out. It's like, no, this push button, sword swing, hit monster, very good. You know, I think there's a good flow to the game. There was a couple times where I didn't find my way to where I needed to go immediately, but those times passed quickly. They do kind of let you get into areas that might whoop your ass a bit more without trying to gate you off, which is cool. It's something I always appreciate. Building up experience happens at a pretty good clip, so you're you know, it's not like a grind to get a level and get another point. You're getting them at a pretty good clip. You're rewarded for exploring nooks and crannies with different weapons and stuff. There's pots you can break that have money in them and will have refills for your throwables. And the game's not... Okay, so The game's not too long, which in my book is a good thing. I finished it. The in-game time was, I think, 4 or 5 hours, which is bullshit. My time in Steam, for some reason, said 2.5 hours, which is also wrong. I know it was much longer than both of those because it doesn't keep the timer running when you die. and I don't know what Steam was doing to get landed a very short amount of time. So I'm sure it was a couple hours more than that with like lost time from dying and whatnot. But, you know, I got to an ending in that amount of time, but it was very clear to me that there, and still is clear to me, that there is more to do in the game. Because like I said, there's maybe a hookshot thing. Like, I can clearly see these things around that will help me get to new areas, but, you know, I killed a boss who seemed last bossy and got credits and got an ending without being able to interact with those things. And my map completion is like 70-something%. So I know there's more areas, and I know there's something else going on. It's not like an upside-down castle, like, I'm missing half the game level of secret. But I know that there is more there, and I haven't figured it out yet. And it's kind of bugging me, and I don't want to look it up. So I'm trying to poke at the edges to see what I missed somewhere to see if I can find more game with more ending. But it's cool. Like, you know, the game feels good. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It doesn't understay its welcome. It has secrets. It has rewarding side stuff. It has good music, good moody music that fits moody. The scene. It looks good. The animations are really nice. Like I mentioned at the top, there's some nice, gruesome, gory animations when you kill some of the enemies. And it's, yeah, it was cool.
I like
it was good.
The violence warning on the Steam page. It says fantastic violence, not fantasy violence, fantastic violence.
Fantastic violence, not fantastical violence.
Yes.
Fantastic violence.
It's magnifique. Pernell, I noticed you played this as well. What did you think of it? Pernell,
cool.
He just checked out.
So informative.
What? I was on mute. Anyway, the point is, yes, I did play it. I did a write-up on it not too long ago. It's a fun game. The item you're looking for is not in the woods, but look more around the wooded area. And that is
not in the woods, but around the wooded area.
Yeah, as in you'll get to the place you're going from the woods.
Okay.
From the woods.
All right.
So, and that's where the hook shot is, and it makes traversal lots of fun.
Not the evil castle, right?
Not the evil castle.
Okay.
No.
All right. Yeah. Then I must. Yeah. Okay. I gotta poke around some more then.
But all it is a fun game. The best accessory in the game that I've come across, even though I didn't do anything with much else, was the Ripper Ring, which you win from doing a weird room where it's a wheel with a man chained to it, and it's sort of like The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Ripper Ring is probably one of the best sub accessories I've ever seen in one of these kinds of games, because the way it works is you do your backstep, and when you backstep, you leave a buzzsaw on the ground that things get torn up in. And as a person who never leveled up his character, that was the saving grace for my playthrough of the game.
Why did you never level up your character?
Because I was looking to see how hard the game would be without leveling up my character.
You're a
glutton. Was it hard, Pernell?
It was challenging, but the Ripper Ring,
masochist.
Man.
What the heck?
No, the Ripper Ring, man. That thing was amazing.
Yeah,
it made everything sweet.
Yeah, I enjoyed the chain lightning accessory because you just hit something once and then lightning goes bing, 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 bing all around the area. Different things. See, there's good, fun things in the game to experiment and play around with. Different styles to play with. So,
no, it's $20. What is your verdict?
Yeah, no, I think it's totally worth it. I, you know, was on the aforementioned day when I did not have internet. I was just there with my Steam Deck, like plugging away at it, having a good time.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. That's it for you. You going to stick around or are you heading out?
No, I'm going. My child woke me up at 4:15 this morning.
Yeah,
so I could go downstairs and be like, get your ass back in bed, which he did. And he did actually sleep a little bit, I believe. So
must be nice. I'm just backing you up, man. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah. 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 And I got a tiny bit more sleep as well. But it definitely, you know, it disrupts me when I got to pull out the dad voice at 4:15 to be like, just go back to bed, you idiot.
You fool.
Like, you need sleep and food to live. You're mad because you don't have those things. No, I'm not tired. I'm not hungry. No.
It's like ridiculous. You don't fucking know.
It's like, I'm doing my best to keep you alive. Ah, my God. Man.
One day they'll realize.
Hey, Chris.
Yeah.
Have you played Incredible Crisis?
Actually, no. That's another good suggestion, because I own it.
All right, perfect. Yes, nice.
A friend of mine streamed it, so I have seen it, but I have not played it myself. That's going on the list. Thank you. Yeah. You're very good at this.
Not too long to play through. So far, I'll probably get worse eventually, but so far, so good. Yeah. Love Incredible Crisis.
Y'all want to know the street value of the loose carts of my NES collection?
All right, hit me.
Entirely too goddamn much.
$7,005.31.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Which one was worth 31 cents?
Probably. Duck Hunt. No. All right. Probably Mighty Bomb Jack or something like that.
All right. Catch you later. Enjoy the rest of the show. Thank you to everyone who's sticking around to watch. There's still 27 people. Bye.
Later.
All right, moving on. Next game, Twice Reborn, a vampire visual novel developed by First Step Cinematics, published by East Asia Soft, released February 22nd on Switch and PS4 for $14.99. Choose to embrace your new role as a vampire or seek a way to reclaim your humanity. Brooke, what is going on in Twice Reborn?
A lot going on here, Joe. You roll up in this game. It's December 31st, 1999, and there you are. Just a goth loner working in a video rental store, wondering if Y2K is really going to fuck everything up. You get cussed out, you get called a bunch of horrible names by a customer, this happens all the time, then you lock up for the night when your friend Ricky stops in to murder you and turn you into a vampire. Oh no, your goth girlfriend comes in, she's trying to check on you, and hear a blood-curdling scream, there's blood everywhere! And boom, now we're rolling up in this game again, only this time it's 2007, and we're a different young man. This time we're not goth, we're at a Catholic college, classic. Will the characters we met in the first scene ever show up again now that we're a totally different dude, and it's decades later in a vampire game? Definitely. This game wouldn't miss an opportunity like that, because this game is a type of high art I like to call high camp. It's fun, it's funny, it's scary if it's horror. It's gory, and it's going to give the audience a bunch of credit, and just they're going to know, the audience knows, that a lot of the characters are going to turn out to be vampires, meaning all kinds of winky shenanigans can happen with this narrative. I loved playing this game. I know this is like killing my building suspense here, but I really want to come cold out the gate and say that with just one look at this game's cover art and the name Twice Reborn, a vampire visual novel, you might think this is going to be a generic, cheesy vampire game, and it's not that it's not that. It is just a little, but in a really smart, funny, like intentional, almost 80s, 90s comedy horror type vibe. This game like reminded me of an amazing vampire action movie like those that I enjoyed in my youth. John Carpenter's Vampires, one of my favorite movies of all time. From Dusk Till Dawn, the first half or so of that movie anyway. This game isn't all comedy, but it definitely is aware of the type of game that it is. And it's a game that's giving the vibes of some of those great old vampire flicks, those action movies that if you're me, you just freaking adore. This game was fun. And it just really surprised me. A major early twist of the story is you're a professor's assistant, but that professor doesn't just want to take you under his wing professionally. He also wants to take you under his vampire bat wing or whatever to make you into a vampire. Let's bulldoze past that. Don't think too hard about that. You instantly know this guy's a vampire in the game, because he's all like, oh, hey, enjoy your week before the next class, make sure to go outside and get some sunshine. And your character's like, hey, professor, why do you look so sad? He's like, nothing. But even though we know that this is up with the professor, this game just layers it on in a lot of fun ways. Like, yes, he's a vampire, but you're never going to guess what else is going on with him after we get over that hump. This game is really dolloping layers upon layers over here. And there's a lot to experience within this really nicely fleshed out little vampire fiction realm. This game's got great writing, and I think it has really amazing world building for what it is too, especially considering it's just a visual novel. Like, most vampire stuff bores me big time in games. I usually only like it when it's funny or campy and mixed with something else, or I feel something like, oh man, I like this vampire game, but did it really have to be vampire story? Could we've done something else, maybe something a little more original? Let me tell you, this story is fun as fuck. It is a vampire story because it needs to be a vampire story. It's got some of the best vampire-like lore and fleshed-out details. The story was a labor of love of someone who had a idea that they had a really good time with, that they had fun with. None of it feels phoned in. Can't wait to finish this game. I can't finish it right now. We'll come back to that in a minute. LOL. Some things I like about this game other than the story and the writing at large. The voiceovers, which I didn't even expect this game to have. It's fully voiced. It's in English. Why do I mention it's in English? Well, this is in the visual novel space. Even though the art style is very American, it's incredibly influenced by Japanese anime and the visual novel games. They're not trying to hide that. They're literally trying to showcase those influences. They're trying to make their own damn anime game, and they did a great job. Normally, for a visual novel title like this that feels a bit more indie, this is a Rattalaika game over here, I personally think it's oftentimes just an expensive waste of time to try and voice it. I actually was talking a couple weeks ago, right before I got this game, to the creator of an upcoming Atome game, Save the Villainess, and we both went on and on about how English VN creators, they need to stop trying to voice all the characters, because we both feel it's just often not being well done, it's not helping their finished product, and it's wasting a ton of time and money. Wow. So I was talking to her, and then two nights later, I tried this game, and I had to update and be like, laughing my ass off, okay, I have to make an exception to the rule here. This voice casting was great. It absolutely adds to and completes this game's vibes. It's character development. Like, some of the characters just wouldn't even be the same, and they feel like they were almost written for the voice actors that they got, sort of like we talked about with Romancevania last week. Like, the writing is holding hands and kissing with the voiceovers. They're in love. It knocked me out of the park. All the voice acting in this game just really added to the humor and the high camp. It really helped me, like, it helped them nail this 80s, 90s classic, like, horror vibe. I couldn't have been happier for the voice actor for the character Ricky. That guy, like, isn't a major character, and his voice actor absolutely just made the entire game for me. Now, this game is available, and I want to say, like, it's either 5 or 6 languages. It's only voiced for English, but it's still, I don't think they should have gone further than that. They clearly know what they're doing there. Another thing I liked outside of the story was the game's art. Like I just mentioned, it's anime made by Americans. And for that being what it is, it's some of the best out there, in my opinion. The cover art for this game is pretty all right, but it does not, like, do it justice. It does not, like, showcase. There's a shitload of sprites with a ton of different poses in this game. This game also has seemingly limitless, like, CGs. This is probably more CGs than I've ever played in a visual novel like this. There's a lot of them. And they really do add to it and set the scene in a lot of places. Great CGs, much higher volume of them than I think most players are used to. Now, I don't want to make anybody mad here with this next compliment, but as we all know, in the world of anime right now, Monster is officially on Netflix suddenly. What up? I want to say the character art for this game reminds me of Monster. Okay, moving on before anybody yells at me for comparing an indie vampire game to one of the greatest artistic creations of all time. Okay, one more thing I like about this game.
I knew there was a reason I liked you.
Dude, we need to... you're going to be getting a DM from me right after the show. We're going to talk about Monster. One more thing I like about this game that isn't the story, just the deft hand with which this game was directed. Super impressed by this. The details, the sound design, the call of, like, I would start a scene, and some music or some sound effects would begin. And sometimes the music or the sound effects would continue through the whole scene and just loop, like visual novels would do. Sometimes it would play once or twice and they would cut it, or they'd change sound. It's just like, I don't really know how to explain that, but if you played a bunch of visual novels, I don't know. They just sort of, they knew when to hold them, they know when to fold them. I guess I'm not going to spend any more time on that one. But yeah, I think this game is honestly really fun attention holder. I think, I was riveted. I think this game will definitely have you laughing, wincing, paying attention to the story, playing along with it. I have a few tiny little complaints, but I won't mention them because I'm just going to mention our one big complaint with this game as we go into the rating here.
Well, that's 15 bucks. Let's hear the rating.
I'm going to give it a buy it, even though in Chapter 8 of this game, which I have to imagine must be towards, like, the endish to the game, at least, like, last third or quarter, there's a game-breaking bug. You cannot finish the game, at least on Switch. I haven't tried it for anything else. It made me really sad because you can't tell I'm loving this game. I'm super engrossed in the story. We did, Joe and I did reach out to East Asia Soft Games. Peter came right back to us the same day and said that the bug is being patched. I did try it a couple times today just to see if they patched it yet. I tried it over the weekend. The patch is not live yet. What happens is we get into Chapter 8, and then at some point it just, like, the software will just close on the Switch and it'll be like, hey, an unknown error occurred and you have to restart the game. I tried to kind of work around it and make a new save, but it always cuts off in Chapter 8. I have not tried this. Peter says that if you cut the audio track, you can complete the chapter. I'm going to just wait until they update it because I am really enjoying, like, the audio of this game. But yeah, maybe it's crazy because you can't finish the game yet, but I'm going to give it a buy it. I'm having a great time.
Sounds good. So keep it. We'll keep you posted when we hear of a patch on that. And if for some reason your verdict changes, we'll revisit it.
Cool. I do think it gives, you know, a lot of hours of good entertainment. I'll check it every day until the next show, and we'll go from there.
Sounds good. All right, next up is Void Terrarium 2, developed by Nipponichi Software, published by NIS America, released February 28th on Switch and PS4 for $39.99. With Cloud AI defeated and Toriko saved from certain demise, a new deadly disease threatens her well-being once more. To save her, join Robbie and venture into the past to identify a remedy. Pernell, what is going on in Void Terrarium 2, which has one of the craziest titles that I'm not going to try saying the actual title?
Void Terrarium 2 is a direct sequel to Void Terrarium 1. Not to say you have to beat the game to really play this, but you will feel a little confused for at least the offset, because it really literally takes off at the very end of the first game. As in, you actually play through the end of the first game and then step into the new game. A number of events occur, which result in you having to move Toriko to a new, I guess, home, and build a new terrarium from the ground up. And the gameplay ends up kind of following the similar notes from the first game, being that the general gameplay loop is that Toriko needs something, and in order to get it, you have to go into a dungeon or dungeons meant to represent, you know, fallen aspects of society before the apocalypse came. And as you explore them in a roguelike fashion, you'll come across items that can be used as equipment to power up Robbie to get stronger. But more importantly, you'll find food reserves to feed Toriko, and also various other objects you can use to explore the dungeon. Now, unlike a lot of roguelike games, though, where you're generally tasked with going into the dungeon and completing the game, the goals for this game are more pertaining to taking care of her. So it may not be get to the end of X dungeon and beat this boss. It may just be find a syringe that is located on this floor of this area. And once you find it, you're free to leave whenever you want. So much so that technically, there isn't even a penalty for dying in this game. If you die, you just get kicked back to the home base, and all the stuff you have in your inventory gets converted to resources, which can be used to craft equipment and items for Toriko's terrarium so that she can feel, you know, comfortable and safe. As far as taking care of her food-wise, you need to bring her food items back to the base. But unfortunately, the new world is a contaminated mess of a wasteland, so the food you find may not always be safe for her to eat. And if so, she could get sick from it. So you could be like me and just only hoard the good stuff that only lasts a certain number of days, but it's still not contaminated, so you don't have to worry about her getting sick on that level. Otherwise, it takes time and other non-contaminated items over time for her to not be so sick if you have to give her rusty dog food. Also, every once in a while, the game will have you hit these like hard narrative beats where something really bad will happen to her. I don't know what's going on, but the narrative will eventually tell you what her deal is, because she deals with some awful stuff in this game. The graphics are cute, but it can get pretty dark and morbid, both from that aspect and from the actual narrative, too. Like, her arm's falling off and messy. You have to patch her back up. So
interesting.
it gets really weird at times. So you might be asking yourself, if you've played Void Terrarium 1, okay, well, you just described Void Terrarium 1. What the hell is different about Void Terrarium 2? And to be honest with you, a few things that stood out to me as being new. Most notably to me was the ability to further customize the terrarium itself. Whereas in the first game, unless I'm forgetting something, because it's been a while, you pretty much just kind of set her terrarium up, you gave her stuff, and she was good. You also got the base bonuses from building in the terrain, which did return in this game. Building things for the first time will give you like stat bumps that you can carry in the future runs. But in this one, you also have to deal with the actual, environmental considerations of the terrarium, like the temperature and the humidity. And those things can affect both Toriko and also potential plants that you can grow inside the terrarium that you can then harvest to ultimately, you know, make her happy, use it for components for future things. It gets pretty nutty at times, like, for the most part. And I kind of like the idea of like going in there, setting up my terrarium to have the right temperature, and you can see like droplets on the terrarium walls. And then I go water my plants and then harvest the crops. And every time you go to water the plant, Toriko walks up and she's kind of smiling like, oh, you're doing something. Like, I am doing something. It's fun. So that part of the game is largely new, is that part. And then lastly, the other thing that's really big and stands out, well, I guess there's two more things that at least I can think of, is that there's a sub-narrative in this game where you eventually start going into the virtual memories of the last humans on Earth before the apocalypse happened. And because, you know, anime magic, you're able to interact with these virtual individuals. So you'll go on quests in this VR world to make the virtual humans happy, which in turn you hope to utilize to learn the secrets of why the Earth actually went to hell, what Toriko is, in hopes of getting a better understanding of how to take care of her and cure her as she's getting sicker and sicker as the game progresses. It's weird in that if you take this game at face value, it's like just the dungeon crawling aspect, it would be absolutely nothing to write home about. The dungeons themselves are pretty bland. Like, they don't have any real visual splendor to them. You're just running around typical corridors, picking up things and beating up enemies largely, which will repeat. And they'll just like have like color changes and stuff like that. And you might find something, okay, well, if that's what you're saying, then it's like you had a lot of fun with the game. And you'd be wrong, because I like Void Terrarium 1 and I like Void Terrarium 2 so much that I bought the game despite getting a review copy, because of the fact that for whatever damn reason, taking care of Toriko is a lot of fun. You actually care about this little weird-eyed girl because she's adorable. She's actually adorable, and it taps into that instinct of a player that just says, this person's dependent on you, and unlike an escort mission, you actually care about their outcome. So I find myself actually being happy when I get back to the base, and she's walking around balancing herself on a table or, like, taking a nap, or she's looking at the plants growing the terrarium, and I'm actually sad when I'm like, oh, no, she's sick. Why is she sick again? Or, oh, crap, I got to clean the terrarium. It's crappy all over in this place. She's got to be safe. I don't want her getting germs. Not in my watch. You get really engaged with it. It's just fun to take care of her. And that rang true in the first game, and it rings true in this game, too. And I feel like without her and that whole aspect of taking care of her and taking care of the terrarium, this game wouldn't work. But the combination of those things make this a great game. And it is one that I do find myself enjoying. And I think the best part of it is also, in addition to that, just the general fact that the dungeon crawling, though there will be parts where you have to get further in for the purpose of, you know, fulfilling long-standing missions and objectives, the fact that the dungeon crawling itself isn't like the main draw so much as what you gain from it to help her, and the fact that penalty for death is minor, it helps a lot. Which I just now remember what the third thing was that I wanted to think about, that they changed. They added improved the pet Navi in this game. The pet Navi was a thing where when you were inside the dungeon, it was a Tamagotchi-like device that you used to monitor her, Toriko's progress and such while you're in the dungeon. Because the longer you're in the dungeon, she'll start to get hungry, she'll defecate in the cell, all kinds of stuff happens, in which case you would be tasked with like, okay, I got to get back to take care of her because if I'm in the dungeon too long, she could die or get really sick. But with this game, you can use your actual dungeon exploration energy or your battery life to go into this sub-menu, and you can play games with her to make her happy. You can actually sanitize the terrarium from inside the dungeon, and you can even send her food, like food nourishment, from inside the dungeon. While it won't actually feed her and make her full, it will sustain her so that she stops getting hungrier as you're running around, so you're able to stay around just a bit longer if you need to buy yourself some time. So all those things combined help to make this game a much better product, and one that, honestly, I would say if you've never played Void Terrarium 1, I don't know how I feel about saying get that one first, because you could be the type of person that's like, well, I already had my fill of this experience, I'm done. But if you're not, but if you are, and if you are that type of person, Void Terrarium 2 improved on the first one in every way, so just buy that. But if you're okay with doing both games, then they're both worth your time. And I definitely wholeheartedly recommend this one, just like I recommended the first one a couple of years ago.
Cool. So it's $40. Go ahead.
This is basically a Tamagotchi game, then, is what I'm understanding about all of this, mixed with diving into dungeons, really. Yes?
50%, yes.
Awesome.
Well, but okay. Yeah.
Getting it.
The more games we review, the more Aki's like, maybe I do want a PlayStation.
No.
This is on the Switch, too, at least.
Kind of. Not really.
Yeah, but Legend of Dragoons on PS5.
Yeah, ever since that, I've been seriously... Like, the day that they announced that, I actually did look at prices.
Legend of Dragoons would actually want to get a PS5?
Yeah.
Not saying the game is bad. I mean,
where else are you
going to
play it?
Exactly.
PS1, right?
Yeah.
Is it a rare game on PS1?
Forever, yo. No, my PS1 just doesn't work anymore because it's, you know, old.
It's like 25 years old.
PS2?
Yeah.
That thing was built like a tank.
Except for all the user issues. No,
I meant I don't have my PS2 anymore. I never had a PS1. I don't have my PS2 anymore because the thick one stopped working, and then the thin one, the latch is a piece of shit, and it won't read discs because the latch isn't considered shut properly because that system is garbage.
Well, I guess what I'll say to that is that you may well end up being one of the only people I know that will be like, I went and seeked out this $600 console to play a game that came out on the PlayStation 1. But it's a good game, and if that's what it takes to get you up to speed, go nuts. Just surprise. It's a good game.
So anyway, Void Terrarium 2 is $40. What's your verdict on it?
I think it's a buy. It's a good game, and one that makes me feel happy.
Pernell, I legit want this game, and I was going to, like, wait to hear your review to see if I was going to buy it. And I'm thrilled to hear that, like, you don't think I need to get the first one, because I want to skip to number 2. So, dude, I'm pumped. It sounds great.
It's a good game. I think you'll like it. And also, talk to me about it when you get it, because no one else I know
has. Well, will do. We'll compare notes.
Yes.
And Legend of Dragoon, $60. What do you think?
What do you think?
I recommend it on... give it a try. I remember liking it, but I also remember back in the day being like, man, some of these combo tests can kiss my ass.
I only started it last week.
Yeah, back when my PS2 still worked, I actually finished all of their combos to Mac.
Holy shit.
I loved that game. Yeah, and I almost had everyone with a special, like, you take 50% less damage, physical damage, and you take 50% less magical damage stuff, or maybe they were nullifying. I don't remember anymore because it's been years. But I was getting, like, the 50,000 fucking dollar items for each character, and it took forever. I never did quite get there, but close.
Crazy. Maybe I should go back to it and then play Legend of Legaia while I'm at it.
I'm an Idiot 19 says I'm buying a PS5 for Starfield.
Starfield.
I bought it for Final Fantasy VII, which is what I bought a PS1 for.
Oh man. All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is Animal Lover, developed by Trainwreck Studios, published by Penguin Pop Games, released February 22nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 and PC for $9.99. Only you can save five hunky boys from a magic curse. Evil forces have turned these five hunky beefcake time displaced boys into animals. You've got to help cure them and maybe even fall in love along the way. Brooke and Aki, the two of you, check this one out. Who wants to start?
I'll open us up. Can. If Aki will permit. Thank you, Aki. Okay, so this game opens up. You're an intern for a veterinarian's office. By the way, I asked for this game. No shame. You're an intern for a vet's office. You're chilling with this hamster, and his name is Ham Chop. A+ hamster name, by the way. Love that. You're waiting for the vet to see him, and you're like, oh my god, he's so cute. He reminds me of my little hamster I had when I was a kid. I'm just going to kiss his little nose through the cage bars. So you lean in to smooch the snoot. Once you do, the snoot starts growing. And the rest of him too. Pretty soon, you're standing in front of a dude with no clothes on and bloody scratches across his chest because the hamster transformed into a human, broke out of his metal cage, and now here he is. A guy that the narrator is telling me is really attractive, although I just think he kind of looks like Fry from Futurama.
Oof.
Cute, but...
yeah, a little bit.
not my type. Immediately, I was like, is this guy supposed to be Fry? Cute, not my type. I prefer more of like a bear than a hamster. But don't worry, Brooke, this game did not forget about your needs. The bear shows up later. Anyway, it turns out this hamster... Crap, I hit page down on my notes. Anyway,
fucking yeah!
This hamster has a little more in common with Fry from Futurama than one might initially think, because once you clean his wounds and you give him some clothes, you start talking to him. Turns out he's been cursed, and he's been trapped as a hamster for hundreds of years, basically making him a time traveler. So he keeps looking around being like, oh my god, it's the future, holy crap. So as you go about your business...
I know what else makes me say holy crap when someone subs. Raider Biz, thank you so much for the sub. Your 11th month... almost a year. Next month will be a year of subs. That is crazy. Thank you so much.
What are we doing for Raider Biz's birthday? What are we doing for Raider Biz's sub birthday?
We're doing a show. We're doing a show. Yeah. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, well,
maybe we're going to party. I'm going to have a new microphone by then, and I will be in the Twitch room, and we're going to chat. We're going to party now, and it's going to be lit. Okay, let me find my notes again. Okay, so he is a lot like Fry from Futurama, is that he's been a hamster hundreds of years. He's a time traveler. He's basically a time traveler. As you go about your business in this game with your new hamster man that you have to hide from your mom, you two figure out that you can turn certain cursed animals back into humans by kissing them, and you slowly meet a grand total of 5 men trapped in human bodies that you have to help. And one interesting note from me before we turn this over to Aki for a bit. Each of these men who have been turned into animals is from a different period of time. The hamster's from hundreds of years ago, before his type of hamster was domesticated, so he's, like, witnessed all that, which raises more questions than it answers. Anyway, the cat is from 1958. The punk ferret, by the way, what a flex to do one of these pet trope games and one of the guys a ferret. That was badass. The punk ferret is from, like, 1980 or something. I don't remember. There's a dog from the 1990s. There's a big fuzzy bear, thank fucking God, finally, from 2016, a game set in, like, 2017. This is fun because this game is long as fuck, and this causes us to have lots of fun moments, like the punk ferret arguing with the royal hamster about, like, socioeconomic issues, and it actually gets really deep and emotional. This game goes pretty deep. Then we get fun moments, like someone explains to the dog guy what a blog is. Oh, it's an online diary, and how people compete with other people's online diaries, so they have the most popular blog, and one of the guys is like, so it's basically it's battle diaries, and everybody's like, you know what, you're not wrong. What are you thinking so far, Aki, before I go crazy here?
Oh, I absolutely I adored all the characters. They're all very interesting, because as stated, they are from different time periods, and they act it like the guy from the 50s. The first thing he does is he's like, thank you, sweetheart. I'm just like, I want to hit you in the face. and my character was also kind of like, I want to hit you in the face.
Carnage being a smart ass asked if they are unique. I can say that the store page, one of the features is unique brand of comedy. So we do have a unique usage.
Yeah. It pains me,
they are
but
kind of unique, I think.
I'm going to give it to him. You know, it always hurts when we hear that word on here. But this game, I mean, this has got a lot of self-aware humor going on. So I kind of want to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
Yeah, I really like that the characters don't just interact with you, which is kind of a problem you find in a lot of Otomes.
Yes.
The characters interact with you, and that's fucking it. Which, I mean, great for female, you know, power fantasy, I guess, when you want to be a damsel in distress, but when all the boys focused on just you. Pussy power, I guess, I don't know. I never understood that concept, but these guys, they interact a lot with each other.
Yeah.
Mostly with each other, even, and you get to occasionally chime in, and it really shows how these older people, they have their own ideas from their time periods, and now they're coming to grips with the shit that they used to do. Not necessarily, you know, nice, like, you know, the 1950s dude being like, oh yeah, you can slap a girl on the ass. It's kind of like a high five, but for girls. No, don't do that. And he's like, oh, okay, I guess. And, you know, and they talk with each other, like previously mentioned how two of the characters were talking about socioeconomic problems and stuff. Like, you get to learn a lot about the characters and the past and stuff. And, you know, like the 50s guy, because I keep harping on him because he talks a lot, surprisingly, about his past. And he, you know, you show him a TV and he's really only seen the beginnings of TVs, because right before he got poofed into an animal, not too long before that was when he finally was able to afford a TV for his mom. Before then, all he had was a radio, because, you know, 50s. So yeah, it's really interesting just seeing all of that and how the characters interact with each other. I appreciate that a lot more than lots of Otomes I play, because you're not a damsel in distress. You do get stressed, very stressed, extremely stressed, but you're not the one in trouble. These guys are. And you're doing your best to help them because you're a bleeding heart, which is fair enough, I guess.
Yeah, I got it. I couldn't agree with you more. I got to hand it to the writers, like this game and the silly vampire game I was just talking about. Like, there's a fair amount of world building, and all the characters do feel like engineered to interact with each other. It feels like that's kind of the point of the game, to hear these different takes. And like, I got to be honest, like I saw that this was a game about dating animals. I saw that Aki already had a copy, and I thought, wouldn't it be fun if I got this game and if it sucked, Aki and I could laugh about it on the show and do like a funny review about how cheesy it is, or like compare notes with other games like this. But yeah, this game really surprised me. And as far as the romance or like any sort of mature content that may or may not happen in this game, I've been playing this game, I think I've got 9 hours in it. And if there's like a route, or there are like a bunch of like romantic
split-offs
coming. So that means this game is long as fuck then, because like I've been playing it a while, and that's not a complaint coming from me. Like, especially hearing the price, like to hear Joe say the price at the beginning, I'm surprised, because this game has a
shitload of content. You actually listened? Someone listened to me when I said the price?
Hey, you know,
I always listen. I just never remember. I've told you this before.
No, you've told me many times you just don't listen to me.
Brooke introduces to this podcast an element of effort.
Just going to point out that my first review here was like 3 pages of Microsoft Word, so, you know, I put effort too.
Just the longer you stick with it, the less you care.
Yeah, that's all.
You
mentioned the price. Animal Lovers is a $10 game. What do the two of you think about it?
Like, I mean, I was saying, I was surprised to like this game, but I love it. Like, I'm not finished with it yet. I'm going to be honest, like, I saw that it was a visual novel. I checked out the art a little bit, and I was like, I could probably pop 2 hours in this game and have a fun review with Aki. It's not that I feel like I couldn't review it, but it's not every game that I'm going to keep playing it after I review it. I love this game. I think it's great. I've actually tried a lot of different games because I want to, you know, become someone who knows a lot about visual novels and dating games. And there's a ton of games where the love interests are pets or animals when the game begins. They're hard to get away from because this is almost like a whole subgenre of dating games. It's almost like a trope genre here. Sometimes mm-hmm. they are funny, but like I haven't really been able to get into it before or do it before, although I do always consider it a flex when they throw a weird animal in there. Even though I didn't like the game, I gotta give D Publishers My Secret Pets props for having a cockatoo guy. I thought that was really funny. But even though I love D3 Publishers so much, couldn't get into that game. And I got into this game, and I think it kind of happens to be an animal love interest game, and it's just doing a lot of cool, fun things. I think it's well written. I think it's delightfully self-aware, and an honestly good time. I'm going to give it the very same specific rating that I would give the vampire game earlier, Twice Reborn. If you're open to the title of the game, it's called Animal Lover, just like Twice Reborn, a vampire visual novel has vampire visual novel in the game. If you're not put off by this title at all, if this is something you conceivably see yourself playing, I highly recommend this game. I think you should play it, because I think it's just a really cool piece of fiction, and I'm not even done with it yet. I think it's awesome.
Nice.
I totally think it's worth playing. I thought it was really fun. As I said, I really like the characters' interactions with each other. I'm all for this. Totally buy it.
Yo, how long did you put into this game?
I probably put a little longer than you did, but not by a lot, because I've met the individual reason why they've turned into animals.
I've kind of gotten the hints given to me, and I'm liking where they're going with it. So that's cool. We'll have to compare notes after I'm done here. Yeah, I thought this was really fun. I think it's a great price for something like this.
Yeah, I plan on finishing it.
There's a lot of games charging. Yeah, there's a lot of games charging like $30 for this experience or this. I think it's worth it.
Nice. Aki, how are the achievements?
Not too bad, actually, other than the fact that they're all fucked up.
They're all fucking numbers! Yay!
Yeah, I fucking hate that. I have like 104. All the achievements in this fucking game are
like 12 points, 12, 13 points. 88,
and 28.
Oh, I love
it. Every achievement is one of those four. I fucking hate that. but getting the achievements isn't bad. So I deal with it for now.
I love games that have weird achievement numbers. Probably. I hope so.
I refuse to believe they did this for any other reason than they heard you and were like, yes, let's do this once.
just to fuck with him. I love it. So many people hate these games because, oh, it doesn't end in a zero or a five. Shut up. It's not an even number. It's an eight. It's an even number. It is literally an even number. That's not what I mean. It's not a five. Five's not an even number. Shut up.
Yeah, the problem is it's not a proper television leaving your volume at number. And I understand and agree. And fuck you, Jeff.
My TV's at 24 right now.
Oh, that. You disgust me. You disgust me. Good. Mine's at 10. Huh? Well, mine's muted. It's technically at zero, but still.
Brooke and Aki, that's it for you two. Are you sticking around, or did you need to head out?
I'm going to fuck off. I need to work on the other visual novel I have to do this week. So,
ooh, what is it?
Joe, do you remember the name of it?
Let me scroll down here. It is Arcadia Fallen.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, cool.
I just remember it looked pretty, and that was...
It does.
Oh, man.
So I don't know anything about it, though.
Something just came up for pre-order on Switch. I don't think it was here last week. It's a fitness boxing Fist of the North Star.
Joe, ooh. Can I please have it? No, just kidding.
Jacob no,
you should
already
go for that
has
if you
it.
Have a Switch. Oh, well.
Who?
Jacob.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yes. Oh, somebody's got
he's
it.
He's an anime nerd, oh, so...
It's expensive.
Yeah, I totally accept that.
I'm glad Jacob's getting it. It's, you know, it's to a good home. Is you it? Better do a good job.
Well, it's to a home. Let's put it that way.
It's to a home.
It's free to a home.
Well, it's to a hovel, but, you know, close enough to a home, whatever.
Anyway, we got to move on. Any final words from you two?
That's it for me. I think I'm enough plugging for the animal game and then the 80s vampire.
If you look at the name and you're like, yes, I want to play this, then you might have issues because it's not what you want. Otherwise, yeah, no, that's it.
All right, night-night, y'all.
I'll talk to you later.
Night. Later, Brooke.
Have a good night. Next game, Grim Guardians Demon Purge, developed by IntiCreate, published by IntiCreate and P-Cube, released February 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $24.99. When a demon's castle darkens the land, two sisters challenge its halls. Together, they can break the curse. Pernell, what is going on in Grim Guardians Demon Purge?
Grim Guardians Demon Purge is basically IntiCreate's take on classic-style Castlevania games, in which case you are in portrayal of two characters from the Galgun series, Shinobu and Maya, demon-hunting sisters who protect the world, and more so their high school. In this context of the game, however, things took a weird turn where at the end of one of their experiences, their antagonist, whose name I don't even remember, is like a little vampire, succubus girl, she stumbles across a magic mirror and uses that mirror to basically turn her high school into a demon castle, merging the demon world and the human world together. And now it is up to Shinobu and Maya to set things right by ascending the castle, a la Castlevania, and taking out the big bad at the end, a la Castlevania, to save the day. And honestly, I'm okay with that, because I already am a fan of what IntiCreate tends to do with, you know, action platformer-style titles, and they kind of shine that magic onto this title as well. The way it plays is that The levels are broken up into typical normal stages. You move through them, defeating enemies as you progress. And at the end of a level, you will face a boss. At the end, if you beat that boss, on occasion, that boss may provide you with a new sub-weapon. Because unlike in Castlevania games, the sub-weapons being weapons you can use that at the cost of weapon energy, you don't get them from candles or objects strewn about the levels. Instead, certain bosses will give you new ones, and then once you acquire them, you can shift between those items by pressing the left bumper button, or the right bumper button. So, what do you do with these sub-weapons? Well, aside from the obvious being kill things by hitting them with bombs or paper origami figures or whatever, you can also use them in certain areas of the castle to go back to them and unlock additional pathways. No, this is not a Metroidvania. If you think it is, you are incorrect. But what it is it's more akin to like how Castlevania 3 Dracula's Curse worked, where it was linear levels that occasionally had alternate routes to get to the end of that level. And in the case of this game, those alternate routes could lead you to things such as locating your missing classmates who are also trapped inside this castle. You may want to find those classmates as well as a certain other items, because if you do not find them, there is an ending in store for you you may not want. Or who am I kidding? You'll want it, because you want both endings. So, the gameplay itself, I feel, is actually pretty fun, too. It's very smooth. Engaging with the world is actually pretty cool. Most of the time, deaths are pretty much your fault and exclusively your fault. The difference between the two characters, aside from their typical sub-weapons, is the fact that Shinobu is a ranged character who gets a submachine gun which she can fire from a distance to damage enemies. Submachine gun itself isn't all that powerful, but the simple fact is, you fire from a distance, and that sometimes is enough. Downside, of course, is that it has limited ammo, and you have to reload the weapon by pressing down twice, which can leave you vulnerable to attacks if you do it at the wrong time. Mai, on the other hand, has melee attacks. Very strong melee attacks. She is pretty much your go-to brawler, though the downside to her is that she has less health than Shinobu, which means she is more prone to dying. It's basically, not only does she have to get up and close and personal, but she can take less damage as well. So, meat shield she needs of Shinobu indeed. So, another thing that's interesting about this game compared to the typical style of this is that you get lives, but the lives themselves don't necessarily get burned out when you die. Because if you're playing this in single-player mode, you are controlling both characters, of which you can switch between them at the press of a button. And you'll be managing, you know, their weapon items or whatever to conserve as much as possible. If someone's getting low on health, you might switch to use the other one until you can find a health item. But in the unfortunate event that one of them dies, whether by falling into one of many pits or by way of taking too much damage, rather than the game forcing you to lose a life immediately, they will instead kick you back to the nearest checkpoint as the other surviving sister. And at that point, you are tasked with reaching out to the point where the previous sister died and pressing the Y button repeatedly to resuscitate them by way of CPR, because as you now know, falling in pits is usually revived by CPR. I'm not the one who makes the rules. I just love them. Now, this can go one of two ways in some respects. Some people might say, well, this makes the game really easy. After all, if you die in a boss fight, you can just go into the boss fight and revive your partner. Or, oh, big whoop, it's not a big deal. I mean, the fact that I get to revive my character makes kind of helps to save the day. But the one downside to that, which can make it a bit of a pain depending on where you die, is the fact that if you happen to die with the wrong sister, i.e. the sister that made it so that you could even get to that point in the first place, I'm not necessarily saying platform wise, because they were smart with the checkpoints in that regard. But in regards to the fact, let's say, for example, you were jumping across a bunch of pits, and Shinobu made it possible for you to do so because you were picking off enemies from a distance, so you didn't have to deal with them while you were in the air jumping across the chasm. And now Shinobu is dead. So now you're stuck using Maya to get to Shinobu, but you didn't want to use Maya to do it in the first place because she's not fit for the situation. Well, guess what? Just accept that you're going to continue and move on with your life. But continues are pretty much treated like lives in this game. That's how lives are considered. So when you die, it'll say continue. You say yes, you lose a life. And you do earn more lives as the play game, as the gameplay progresses. All in all, I do find this game to be enjoyable. I like the fact that the weapons are different as they are. Admittedly, though, I do kind of wish you did get some form of sub-weapons from the gameplay, because one of the things that made me like, or I guess it's hard to say, maybe it's a bit of a mixed bag with Castlevania when you think about it, but sometimes it was about finding the different weapons during the level that made you approach different sections because in a way related to how you got weapons at that point in time. Whereas in this game, you always have the sub-weapon so long as you've already earned them. So you can very well just use the same sub-weapon for the most part until you need to change ad nauseum, which reduces some of the variability that you can experience during a level play, you know? But that doesn't mean the gameplay itself is bad. It just has me thinking, man, sure it would be nice if I had a little bit more variability in the stage experiences. But I still think the game is fun, and I do think it's worth the scratch. It's a bit on the pricey side for some people, but eh.
Yeah, it's sitting at $24.99. What is your verdict on the game at $25?
I'd say go ahead and buy it. Art doesn't come cheap, and the game is fun.
Cool, sounds good.
I might grab a physical.
Yeah, do they have a physical?
Not yet, but it's coming.
Yeah, not yet. It's sometime in the spring, but I'm seeing, yeah, I think Pecube is publishing it. So nice. I think it'll actually show up in stores and stuff instead of, you know, for 5 seconds on a Friday morning or whatever.
Yeah, freaking limited run. Yeah, the fact that it's going to actually be, if it makes it to Best Buy, that's enough for me. The limited run does that sometimes too.
I literally just gave limited run money for the first time in a long time today because they came out with the physical of Moon, the collector's edition, so I had to have it.
But you're going to say for Ninja Ja Ja Maru.
No. That's strictly limited.
See, there's multiple people who do the same racket.
I have given Strictly Limited a lot of money because they also handled the Darius collections, Bubble Bobble for Friends, and heck, there's another one I can't even remember.
Oh, they handled heck?
Nah.
I love that game.
Heck.
Anyway, oh, next game to talk about is Meg's Monster, developed and published by Odin Cat, released March 2nd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $14.99. Take control of the underworld's grumpiest ghoul to help a little lost girl find her way home in this creepy, cute indie adventure. Just be warned, if she cries, the whole world dies. Chris, what's going on in Meg's Monster?
Okay, so Meg's Monster. Wow, I talk about a game today. I'm not used to being so low down the list, you know? Anyways, yes, Meg's Monster. So this is actually kind of like the closest thing I can kind of compare it to is The Longest 5 Minutes, which, as you know, is one of my top 10 favorite Switch games. But it is a pixel art, almost RPG, that is really more of a story that you play through, like a, not like a walking simulator kind of thing, heavens no, but basically, like, there's just a ton of dialogue versus the actual gameplay. Undertale, yeah, we'll talk about how to compare it to Undertale, Thimber. So yes, you start off as an adult who is, you know, going into a lab that has a laboratory that has obviously been, like, abandoned, overgrown with plants and stuff. And she's trying to recall her past, why she's so drawn to a red star in the sky, you know, mysterious things like that. And then you begin the story where basically, yes, a monster named Roy, who is just a hulking beast man of a, I don't know, like a man fish. I don't know. Like, but one of his arms is a lobster with a giant eye that is attached to his chest, which, by the way, the eye moves whenever his other eyes move. So it's like, it's a functioning eye, which I actually think is kind of great. It's got some cute moves like that actually in the sprite art. But yeah, he is just, you know, enjoying his day eating magic tar, which is just this black goop that everybody hates, but it's everywhere, and he loves it. And he and his best friend, who is also a monster, are just hanging out. This little girl shows up, seemingly from nowhere, and just immediately, like, you know, she's scared, she's looking for her mom, she immediately attaches to Roy. And, you know, even though his friend is like, well, we could just eat her, they find out, like, you know, his friend goes to, like, eat this little girl because that's what monsters do. And then she starts crying, and suddenly, like, everything starts to, like, you know, it disaster's about to happen. Like, you know, the sky turns red, and, like, Roy is like, you know, feels like he's on fire. And so they're like, actually, maybe we shouldn't eat this little girl until we find out what's up. Because, yeah, it just gets worse as she gets, you know, more in danger. So that starts you more or less on your story. So you basically get to explore around your little underground world of, you know, the underworld, where monsters live, and humans don't tend to go unless they are about to get eaten. But you also find out that there's actually like politics and like, you know, a council that, you know, is keeping up a neutrality act. So like they have specific rules about how monsters and humans interact. So like there's an establishment, a bond between the two societies of kind of, you know, a mutual neutrality and stuff. So anyway, this girl doesn't care. She really just wants to play and find her mom. And so, the gist of it is going from place to place, experiencing the story, and occasionally getting into, you know, scripted, unavoidable fights. And you find out immediately that Roy is nigh invincible. He's got 99,999 hit points. Enemies tend to hit him for about like 10 to 20 hit points. But the thing is that everything that hits him does splash damage to Meg. And Meg is a little weakling. So essentially, like every time he gets hurt, it doesn't actually hurt him, but it does cause her to take damage. And if she takes too much damage, she'll cry, world ends, you know, that's bad. And through the story events, you actually gain toys. And with these toys, you actually, you know, you play with Meg to calm her down. Each, you know, toy has its own little, you know, piece of the story that happens to. And, you know, it all actually ends up being really significant later on. But yeah, it's basically a balancing act between like your invincible dude, like having to beat up these other monsters and whatnot. And but also while protecting his extremely vulnerable little companion, you know, who is, you know, like I said, tanking, can't tank any damage. So like that's kind of the gist of it. Really, like I said, it's 9 points or 9 parts dialogue to 1 part action. Every single fight is just part of the story. There's no random encounters at all. And even though you do level up after every single fight for some reason, like you, Roy and Meg, it's to a fixed amount. And so it's like there's no getting the upper hand on like an especially tough enemy. But having said, I actually played through the entirety of this game. It took about 5 hours, and I saw the game over screen one time. So it's not a super hard game or anything like that. You just need like general RPG know-how, and if you lose, you just start right over from the beginning of the battle. It's fine, no problem. But yeah, well, what like is
it's
really
just like more of an experience than a stressful game.
It is, and what an experience is what I was going to get to. So some people will say Undertale because it's about a human dealing with monsters, blah, 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 blah. No. This game is much more akin to and probably inspired by Mother 3. There's a lot more Mother 3 in this than there is Undertale. There's not a whole lot of just, you know, you don't date a skeleton. There's not like a TV quiz show with a TV cook show with a robot and things like that. There's not absurd things that happen. It's actually played off pretty sincerely, even though, like I said, the art style is cute, and you know, the characters are like eccentric and sometimes very funny. It's really, this game goes for the heart. It absolutely is going to grab you a few times before you are done with this one. It is not played for goof points, then suddenly turns into like, you know, whatever Undertale turns into. Everything, you know, has it's all linked together really well. It's a well-written story. It's not about like surprises. However, twists and turns abound. You won't know how this game ends when you start it. You're not going to predict too much, and if you do, then they want you to. So that's really cool. Like, there's a whole lot going on here. The one thing I will say that it compares to Undertale is on your second playthrough of Undertale, if you're doing like pacifist route or whatever, and you go in and like learn all of the like crazy history of like the place where you're in, and like learn all about the other characters that you didn't see the first time through, and even characters you'll never see in the game unless you do stupid things to manipulate the data or whatever. If you enjoy that part of Undertale, like the under part of Undertale, where you dig deep into like knowing the lore and like these crazy things that get connected, that's what this game ends up being about, more so than just you know, a buddy comedy between a little girl and a giant monster lobster man thing. this game is great. It like I said, it has not a whole lot of characters, but it will make you care about each and every one of them. You're going to get to know this small cast of characters. And I, when I ended this game, I was like, that was incredible. Nice. I was super, super into the way it was written, the music, the aesthetics. Like I said, Mother 3 is my second favorite video game ever made. So when I, you know, kind of got that sense of it, then it made a lot of sense and really resonated with me. So there you go.
Nice. And the store page does mention that players will have to master the unique mechanics and mini games baked into each battle. So
okay, so they're not unique, they're actually quite recognizable, and one of them is literally tap the button as fast as you can. So it's not unique, it's well done. one of them was actually pretty clever, and I really do have to hand it to this game, like for some of the stuff that they do throw at you for winning battles and stuff. Like, it's not just attack, heal, defend, attack, whatever. Like, you do have to do mini games, and it's nice. It's pretty cool. I'm not gonna spoiler any of them because you'll just see them when they come up, but yeah. I mean, it's nothing you've not seen before.
Well, so your official verdict at $15?
Yeah, $15. This is absolutely worth it. You aren't going to get a whole lot of hours out of it. And I can confirm, once you beat it, basically all you get is the ability to choose a chapter to start on for your next playthrough and read through. And you can change the chapter anytime you like. So if there's a particular part you liked, you can replay it. It doesn't give you new game plus, like extra levels, extra... I don't even think there's extra content. So just know,
it's like a one and done kind of game.
For your $15, you're getting a really, really good, probably 4 to 5 hours of mostly reading. But I do recommend it. I say absolutely do buy it. Just don't, you know, don't think you're getting a whole ton of time out of it. So there you go.
Cool. All right. Next up, Planet Cube Edge, developed by Sunna Entertainment, published by Firestoke, released February 23rd on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $14.99. Planet Cube is being invaded by a mysterious aggressor, and its populace are not ready for a fight. While most cubes run to the nearest exit, one square-headed lab technician named Edge finds it in himself to save the world. Of course, he'll have a little help from coworkers and the illustrious Dr. Quadratus, as well as some experimental weapons. Pernell, tell us about your time with Planet Cube.
There won't be much to tell because I didn't get very far. You want to know why? Because everybody was talking about how I was a masochist from that one game we talked about, but this is the real masochism right here. Planet freaking Cube Edge. This game is going to mess your day up. You're going to die a lot. They put a mean-ass jump within the first 10 minutes of the game.
Oh, my God.
It is a mess, man. But I got to say, though, that is not a slight on the game. They knew what they were doing going in, so I knew what I was getting going in. And what I got was a good time that was beating the snot out of me every step of the way. You are engaging in a narrative that takes place in the form of, like, as Joe mentioned, you know, the plant's under attack, enemies are coming after you, and all these cube heads are pretty much pacifists. And then you have this one character who decided to build himself a proton blaster because he's like, well, what if we ever need to defend ourselves? We should have some kind of weaponry. So fortunately, time came, his weapon was called into action, and now he is like pretty much the one guy fighting back, while everybody else is just trying to rescue themselves and each other, of course. So, progression in the game, from what I could tell, is going pretty much engaging the variety of events that take place in the game an attempt to survive the next coming incident as you're going from a side-scrolling area to side-scrolling area. Initially, all you have is the jumping ability, just basic jumping and running, but then eventually you'll get a few upgrades as the game progresses, such as a gun and a double jump and an air dash. Now, with that in mind, however, they don't make the game easier. Lots of the time when you get stuff like that, they make the game easier. In this game, that just means they can do more crap to you because you have tools to handle it. And that's also kind of fun. It's like, well, I got this air dash. What a relief. I was having trouble making a bunch of jumps earlier. Well, nah, this time you're not going to really pull much up.
Now they're going to be harder.
Harder. Give you some context on how this game got to me. There was one particular collectible on the second level that I was determined to get where they wanted you to butt bounce off of from one end of the screen to the other and then back, and you had to do it by using 12 bats that were swirling in circles of four. So three circles of four bats, you had to get all the way across the screen by using butt bounces. Very precise butt bounces, mind you, because the bats are moving. And when you kill them, they don't respawn. I must have died there like 100 times. And I'm not even exaggerating that number, because my current death count is around 500. And I'm fine with that. I just wish I didn't have to see it to remind me that I got my ass handed to me royally. But I have gotten every goddamn collectible minus one so far, so I'm comfortable with that shit.
There's a few. I couldn't figure out how I was supposed to get them.
This could just be me not getting it, but I assumed maybe you could get special abilities and then come back to old levels. But then I went back to the first level after getting the proton gun and I didn't have it. So I was like, I don't know. I guess you don't get to take the air dash back, because if you could, that would be how I get the one that I was missing on stage one, where it was between the spiked wall and the spiked floor. Because it was like, okay, well, I can't land anywhere. So I mean, I have to be able to grab it and come back somehow, i.e. an air dash or a double jump. But if you can't bring your shit back with you, then I don't know. But I just left it and said, screw it. But the other ones I've been pretty much picking up. And I do like this game a lot. The levels can go on for a pretty damn long time, though, which could get old. But with that in mind, I decide to look at this from a different angle, which is a lot of games will be, like the Super Meat Boys and the like, it'll be a bunch of levels and small snippets. In this game, it's not too many levels that are very long snippets. But the checkpoints are generous. If you quit the game and come back, it restarts you at the last checkpoint you reach in the level. Which means you could treat this game as start and stop whenever you freaking feel like it. Which, as a result, I just look at it like that. Well, I can pick it up and play when I feel like it. I get tired of it, I can come back later and try some more. I'm not beholden to beat the entire level in one sitting. So I'm not all that concerned about how long the levels are in that capacity. Just don't quit the level and come back later, because then you will have to start the level over. But all in all, I think the game is fine. Just know that when I say that this is a buy it, this does not apply to people who said that me playing Eldoran without leveling up was masochistic. This is not for you. This is for everyone else who can handle this kind of shit. It is worth your time.
I didn't even get to ask. You just jumped right to it.
He's good at that.
It's a flow. I can still answer, though.
No, it's okay. You don't have to.
It's all right.
just go do what you
doesn't
want.
Doesn't matter. I don't have to do my job here.
No one considers Joe's feelings.
Joe's feelings are that this game is a buy it.
$15 officially.
I think this is a buy it personally.
Cool. All right, one final game to talk about tonight is called Ronyu's Tale, developed by Kunji Studio, published by 8-Bit Legit, released February 24th on the Switch for $7.99. Polish those magic and thinking skills, because there's no turning back. Help Ronyu find his way through a death-defying dungeon and take down a plague of enemies hell-bent on keeping him there. Ronyu's Tale is a top-down puzzler with action elements. While levels are designed to have one or more paths, each step Ronyu takes will cause the tiles to break as he passes. Chris, tell us about your time with Ronyu's Tale, which I believe is an actual honest-to-God NES game.
It's his, and it's from Mega Cat, so yeah, they actually are making carts of this one. I was hoping that the description wouldn't give away too much, because there's not a whole lot to talk about. Ronyu's Tale, yes, this is about a boy who falls into a thing, a magical hole is what they call it, and meets a ghost girl who's like, well, let's get out of here. If I can get out of here with you, then I will have escaped, because I died down here many years ago, and blah, blah, blah. So you, you're a boy, and you kind of have your non-playable ghost companion coming along with you. So the way that the stages are set up is on a bunch of tiles that you walk across, and it's basically, you know, the tiles are the sort where it's like that kind of thing that you that's in a lot of video games where it's like when you step over it once, it then disappears and you cannot step over it again lest you die. So you have to basically draw a straight line from the, you know, from the beginning of the stage to the end of the stage and get rid of the obstacles. So for every collection of stages that there are, you are given a certain, or rather what is added to your stock of powers is like one more thing that you can do for a limited amount of times per stage. So the first five stages, you have 3 fireballs per stage. A fireball can take down any enemy, of which there are usually more than 3. And, it will also, however, break breakable blocks, which there's nothing else that can do that. So you have to kind of figure out how many breakable blocks are there in this dungeon. Is there a way around them? Do I have to make sure that I have a fireball when I get to one? And so, you know, it's kind of planning that out in advance. There's no timer in the game, besides the fact that there are enemies that have fixed movement patterns. You know, there's no urgency to get out of a situation unless there's like an enemy heading right towards you and you can't, you know, you got to save up your fireballs so, you know, you can't murder them. And then, like, in the second set of stages, you know, every time you you beat 5 stages, you get an orb. Like I said, you know, each of the 5 stages utilize all the tools that you have in your possession and scale up in difficulty, and then and you know, general cleverness. And then you get to the next 5 stages and you've got an orb, which, you know, you have also another power that unlocks, and then the next 5 stages are going to utilize a combination of those 2 powers. And then, you know, the third set adds a third power, and you have to use all 3 of them. Eventually, it gets pretty messy. I will say, however, I did not get past the third set. Having said, I'm pretty proud of myself for getting past the first 2 sets, because, yeah, this these folks do know how to program an NES game, and that is to say they made it pretty hard. But not impossible. It's a puzzle game, so you just got to figure it out and, you know, execute. It has a very, like, Adventures of Lolo kind of feel to it, you know, like the whole one screen stage, and, you know, there's certain movements that you have to make, and it's basically a matter of like learning what those movements are and, you know, kind of adjusting to things. Not a whole lot of surprises, though. You can usually kind of, you know, see ahead of like what's happening, but it, like I said, the tools themselves actually make for very clever puzzles. So, and like I said, there's the 3 fireballs, so you gotta count out your 3 fireballs. The second power-up is a jumping boot that lets you clear one empty space, so, like, you know, one hole in the ground, essentially. You can jump over it, but you only have one, so, you know, you gotta figure out. And, you know, the way that the paths kind of work out is that, oh, yes, if I do this perfectly, then I will create one hole that I then have to jump over, so I can't use my jump until this exact moment. But then it's things like in the third stage, you get the power to transform into a ghost for a certain amount of tiles and not take any damage. So then you got a lot of things that are doing damage. You're like, well, where am I going to need this? You know, rather than saying, well, I could just keep using this. It's like, no, you're limited. So, you know, it's all about learning how to use the tools and how they are going to interact with the world around you and stuff. So I quite like that. Soundtrack is good. It's very good. You know, I think people relish the idea of creating an 8-bit soundtrack because most people do it pretty well. Graphics are functional. They're pretty good. The controls are good. The only real thing about it is that, like, it kind of hovers between free movement and, like, you know, movement across a certain tile one at a time. So sometimes it's a little hard not to accidentally overcorrect and step right off the edge because, you know, there's no guardrails in the game. But, you know, that gets annoying when you're, you know, because every time you lose three lives, you get thrown back to the title screen, and there is a password system. However, the password system will start you at the beginning of a set of levels. So you have three lives to get through five levels, essentially. And so when you're on the fifth level and you're like, I'm doing so good, man, but I'm on my last life, I better not screw this up, and you just straight up walk off the edge, then, you know, that'll, you know.
GG.
That'll learn you.
That's where you would pull your hair out if we still had hair, us NES enjoyers. So there you go.
Oh, we're like all bald.
It's Homer Simpson style, like pull out one of the three hairs.
That was one of my favorite sketches on that show. And then when he had Lisa.
yeah, exactly.
So there you go. All right, well, Roni's Tale is $7.99. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, that's a good price for a new NES game that's actually quite good. I'd say it's worth it. I mean, if you're really wanting to get the real deal experience, then I suppose you should hit up Mega Cat and, you know, catch that physical that's coming out. They're actually they're going to be publishing a friend of mine's game, Guntner, which is going to come out as a cartridge too. So
nice.
Ooh, real excited about that. Get it? Nice thought.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm real excited about, you know, actually knowing somebody that made an NES game pretty much all by himself, as I understand. So,
and I'm glad you gave this one the positive nod, because I was eyeballing this one in the store, and
I like when I learned it. That
you had it, I was like, I'll wait for what he has to say.
It's clever. It makes you use your brain. There's not a lot of fluff to it. Like I said, it's just the password system might irk you a little bit. Oh, and there is one more thing, and it just has to do with the UI. So the UI, you get options of like volume control and, like, you know, I was going to say border patrol. You get to choose your border. One of which is wood paneling. So I like that, like a wood panel TV. But there's no option to reset the game from the menu. So if you accidentally start a brand new game instead of using your password, you have to just close the software and open it back up again, or get
That's actually kind of weird to omit.
Yeah, it's super light on things that probably should have been in there. As far as, like, you know, you're running a ROM, you can put some options in there, man. Like, I'm not asking for like a rewind button or anything, but let me reset the game at least.
I guess maybe they're trying to pull one of those lines where, like, well, most NES games didn't let you do that. Like, well,
all NESs have a reset button.
Reset, but yeah, I'm talking about the game themselves. Yeah, like, you couldn't go to Lolo reset, and save it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get it, but, like, yeah, that, I mean, in lieu of having an actual NES to play this, like, I would like an option on my software machine to not have to close out the entire software and then load it back up again if I accidentally don't enter my password or something. But yeah,
agreed.
At least I like that you can just take a screenshot of your passwords, no writing them down now.
Oh, that's
which is a weird thing to praise in the year of our Lord 2023, when saving video games has been a thing for like 40 years now.
But hey, but you can resurrect the password book if you so feel like it.
It's true. I can down these passwords.
We don't need passwords. I'm good not having passwords. Let's not go back to that age.
You don't miss the age where you had to determine whether it was a 0 or an 0?
Hell no.
At least most of the things get away from that now, so, you know.
True. Like trying to put in, like, an Xbox gift card code, and you're like, oh no, I scratched too hard. Is that a Z or a 7?
Oof.
Yeah, always fun. That is it for this episode. We made it through another one. Thanks to you two for being here. Thanks to Tim and Brooke and Aki for being here, hanging out as well. Music this episode, I think I'm going to play another track off of the Game Groove's Hail to the Night, a metalcore tribute to Shovel Knight project. So we're going to listen to some Shovel Knight metalcore. Sound good?
I feel like shoveling. Yeah, I feel like shoveling some hail.
Time to strike the iron.
Yeah, we just had snow yesterday. We had snow just melted today.
And we see you guys for getting freaking snow all season. We got nothing with the exception of one light dusting on Saturday, which barely even counts as a snowing. But
I'm in Texas. It just got like slightly cold one week, and everybody looted the grocery stores and whatnot.
Are you able to make that statement anymore after like those last two winters where you guys got bombarded with snow?
Yeah, this time we didn't though, but people still panicked as soon as it got slightly cold.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
Maybe they were all traumatized by the last snowstorm.
I think they were, and they know that we still have the same government that we did last time, so it's gonna, you know, next time it happens, it's gonna be exactly as bad and with no hope.
Just know that when the weather system kicks in, just go to Ted Cruz's house and hang out in front. Like, we know you're gonna fucking leave. We're not letting you.
Exactly. Somebody did make that joke or something about, like, how if Ted Cruz heads to the airport, that's 6 more weeks of winter.
Forget Punxsutawney Phil.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
This episode is going to be called Ted's Vacation.
Nice.
And no one will get it until the final minute of the episode.
Congratulations for making it to the end.
Yeah, I can't believe you made listeners. It this far. Thanks for hanging out this long.
You guys are the true fans of this show, not those idiots that leave within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, fuck them. Anyone have any final words to end the show?
Ooga booga booga, get those Pokemon.
I just called 90% of the listeners an idiot, so I think that's good enough to end on.
Have any final words? You're all fucking stupid.